is A, circle B. A, no, circle plus B, A, circle B. But these effects are very simple. They're just one zero measurements, two valued measurements. Question is, can we find the structure for more general measurements, measurements that have more than two values? And it's important to have structures. In mathematics, structures are very important. Groups, rings, fields, algebras, and things like that are very powerful. In physics, having structure is also important. If you know the symmetries of a physical system, then if you know that these symmetries form a group, this is very powerful. You can use the powerful results of group theory in order to find out more about your system. So for this reason, I think it's important to be able to find some kind of a structure for the measurements in quantum mechanics. And I'll show you how I think I can add and multiply, in certain senses, measurements. And what I'm going to do is the following. I'm going to be able to add measurements, and they're going to not form an effect algebra like what we originally started with, but they'll form a thing called a generalized effect algebra. But the intervals in this generalized effect algebra will be effect algebras, and they'll have a lot of the properties that our original effect algebra had. And also, this will give us a new order for observables. This sounds like a religious kind of a talk when I talk about the new order, but this is going to give us a new order on observables, which in some cases is better, in some cases worse than the old order. So that's the kind of thing I'm going to talk about. Anybody seen this kind of? Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to need some definitions. And most of these definitions you've heard before from Howard's and Alex's and Dave's talk. So I think I'll be able to go through them fairly quickly. I guess we have to start off with what an effect algebra is. Now, in effect algebra, the main operation that we use is this orthosum, plus. And whenever this orthosum, this is a partially defined operation, A plus B. And when it's defined, we'll say that A and B are orthogonal, right? A per B. And then we have a thing called the generalized effect algebra. Generalized effect algebra is an algebraic system consisting of a set E, a zero element, and this partially defined operation, plus. And it satisfies five axioms. First axiom essentially says the commutative law holds. If one side is defined, the other side is defined, and they're equal. The second axiom is the associative law holds. One side is defined, the other side is defined, and they're equal. Third axiom essentially defines the zero. It says that zero can be added to any element and get that element back. The fourth axiom says that it's a cancellation law. If A plus B equals A plus C, then B is equal to C. And then this fifth axiom is sometimes called positivity. Sum of two effects equals zero implies that they're both zero. So that's generalized effect algebra. And then we call a generalized ortho algebra. I think probably Alex has another name for generalized effect algebra, some kind of summing range, right? But we'll just call them generalized effect algebra. So what about generalized ortho algebra? That's just a generalized effect algebra together with one axiom more that says that if you can add A to itself, it has to be zero. Zero is the only thing you can add to itself. Then an effect algebra. That, as we will see, is a special kind of generalized effect algebra. It's a system E together with two elements, 0, 1, and circle plus. And it satisfies four axioms. It satisfies those first two that we had before. You have commutativity, you have associativity, and then you have an ortho supplement. Every element has a unique element whose sum for a bit is 1, and then you have the 0-1 law. The only thing you can add to 1 is 0. That's a effect algebra. And an orthoalgebra is just an effect algebra that satisfies this OA. You can only add 0 to itself. And we have a couple of lemmas. The first one is kind of comforting. It says every effect algebra is a generalized effect algebra, and every orthoalgebra is a generalized orthoalgebra. So generalized effect algebras are more general than effect algebras, similarly for orthoalgebras, which is good. Else we change our terminology. And then the next thing that we're going to talk about is an order. We can make an order on these effects. And you've seen this before. A is less than or equal to B if there is a C. That's that A plus C is equal to B. And this C is unique. And the next lemma says that if you take an effect algebra together with this order, you get a partially ordered set. And everything is greater than or equal to 0 in this partially ordered set. OK, now let's say we take one of these effect algebras. Then I'm going to show you that inside of any one of these generalized effect algebras, there's lots of effect algebras sitting in there. So what you do is you take one of these generalized effect algebras, and you take any non-zero element in there. You take the interval from 0 to A. It's everything between 0 and A. And then you define a surface plus on there. You just define it to be the old surface plus as it exists. And their sum is less than or equal to A. So you define kind of a surface plus restricted to this interval. And the next result says that if you have a generalized effect algebra or orthoalgebra, you take one of these intervals, then that will be an effect algebra or orthoalgebra. So these intervals sit inside these generalized effect algebras and their effect algebras. And there's various properties of this order. If you have a effect algebra, and you look at the effect algebra, the order together with the prime, with the bounded involution poset, meaning that everything between 0 and 1 is an involution. A prime prime is A, inverts order. A less than or equal to B implies B prime less than or equal to A prime. And if it happens to be an orthoalgebra, it's more. It's an orthocomplement poset, meaning that A and A prime, the intersection, greatest lower bound is 0, and the least upper bound is 1. And if it's an orthoalgebra, and when A is perfect to B, implies that A plus B is supremum, then that is called an orthomodular poset. And if it happens to be a lattice, moreover, then it's called lattice order. Now, maybe I'll skip these next couple ones. They're a little technical, and I won't stress them. An element is sharp, that's important, if A in A prime is 0. And one other definition that we'll use, and that's a generalized sigma effect algebra. If you have a effect algebra, it's a generalized sigma effect algebra, if any increasing sequence of effects has at least a bound. There. Let's see. Well, here we'll use this definition later. A map from between two effect algebras is additive if essentially it preserves a sum. Whenever you have a sum here, the sum there exists and they're equal. So if you have one of these additive maps and it takes, whoops, there's a mistake there. Should be a 1 there. If it takes 1 to 1, it's called a morphism. And it's a monomorphism. If two things are orthogonal, implies the original ones are orthogonal. And if it's a surjective monomorphism, it's an isomorphism. More definitions, unfortunately. I guess what were called sigma morphisms, ones that are between sigma effect algebras that preserve soups when they're increasing. Now, there are many examples. I guess I'll talk a little bit about examples of effect algebras. There's many examples of effect algebras. But I'll only mention a couple here. You can make the unit interval in the real line in effect algebra just by defining A plus B to exist if A plus B is less than or equal to 1. And just define the ordinary plus. If you take all the fuzzy subsets of a set, that's an effect algebra where you define the sum when the sum is less than or equal to 1, and some of the functions are less than or equal to 1. Boolean algebras are effect algebras, where you define circle plus to be the disjoint union of sets or elements of your Boolean algebra. Important one for us is the effect algebra on a Hilbert space. So, I guess here I mention also that when you have a sigma morphism from an effect algebra to 0, 1, that's called a state. If you have a Hilbert space and you look at all the operators between 0 and the identity, that forms effect algebra if you define the sum in a simple way. You take two of them, you define the sum if their sum is less than or equal to the identity, so they're still an effect, and you define the ordinary sum. And that becomes a sigma effect algebra, and the sharp elements in such a sigma effect algebra are just the projections. And if you have a self-adjoint operator on your Hilbert space, then your spectral measure is a sigma morphism from the Borel set to the real line into the projections. So Borel set to the real line, form an effect algebra, if you have a sigma morphism, projections, that's self-adjoint. And more generally, and this will be important for us, you take a sigma morphism from the Borel sets into the set of effects. That's a normalized positive operator value measure. Now, I also want to define products. I guess it's the last of my definitions, thank goodness. If I have two effects, then I want to define a sequential product of these two effects. And we'll call that circle. And this circle is going to be an operation on the set of effects. And if it happens that it's commutative, A circle B happens to be the same as B circle A, then we'll just write A bar B. So now we'll define a sequential effect algebra. Sequential effect algebra, or C, is a system E together with two elements, your 0, your 1, plus, and then a new thing, circle, where first four elements are just our old effect algebra, and then circle is a binary operation satisfying five axioms. And the first one is that it's additive in the second argument. So that means that A circle B plus C is A circle B plus A circle C. One circle A is A. If A circle B happens to be 0, then they commute. If A commutes with B, then A commutes with B prime. And also, an associative law holds in this case for any C. This axiom is if C commutes with A and C commutes with B, then C commutes with the sequential product and C commutes with the sum when it exists. So that is a C. And again, there's many examples of C's. For example, the unit interval. And the real line is a C. You take the product just to be the ordinary product. That's the unique sequential product there. You take a Boolean algebra, that becomes a C. If you take the product just to be the nth, the two elements, and that's the unique sequential algebra, the unique sequential product on a Boolean algebra. You take fuzzy subsets of a set, you take your circle just to be ordinary product of the functions, that's the unique sequential product. On Hilbert space, there's a sequential product. Namely, if I take two effects, then I'll take A circle B to be A to the 1/2 B, A to the 1/2. A to the 1/2 is a unique square root. That turns out to be a sequential product. Unfortunately, I don't know if it's unique or not. It's an unsolved open problem that I'd like to have answered. If that's the unique sequential product, that would be really great. I don't know. Now we finally get with all those definitions to the meat of this talk, and that is, how can I define sums of measurements? So, here we go. First of all, what is a measurement? So, let's start off with an effect algebra. Is there some water? My voice is fine. So let's start off with, we'll call it, we'll always start off with that, sigma effect algebra. So let's start off with a sigma effect algebra. E will be a sigma effect algebra. And D of R is the Borel set to the real line, the empty set, the real line, and a circle plus, which is just the disjoint union. That's a sigma effect algebra. And here's the definition of a measurement. A measurement is just an effect algebra, it's just an effect value measure. So it's a sigma morphism from the Borel set to the real line to the effects in this abstract effect algebra. In other words, this x, this measurement that I'm trying to describe, takes the real line to 1 and takes disjoint unions to circle plus. And there's a, of course, a physical motivation, a physical meaning to this thing. X of delta means it's the effect that's observed when your measurement has a value in this Borel set, delta. That's what this physically means. And, okay, so we'll denote the set of measurements on effect algebra by ME. So ME will be the set of all measurements, all of these effect value measures on our effect algebra. And, for example, it's easier to look at these finite measurements. What's a finite measurement? Finite measurement just is a measurement that has a finite number of values. And so, let's suppose x is a finite measurement. Here's the values, finite number of them, lambda 1 up to lambda, real numbers. And x of the singleton set is ai. Of course, these are called the operation elements, or measurement elements for this measurement. And these ai's are not zero, and they have to sum to 1. Then, of course, if you have a finite measurement, x of any Borel set is just the sum of the ai's whose lambda I are contained in delta. We'll denote the finite measurements by mf of e. Examples of finite measurements would be ones. I'm going to be drinking myself to a stupor here. So, finite measurements are examples of, here's some examples of finite measurements. For example, a constant measurement. A measurement just takes a singleton set to 1. That's the constant measurement whose single value is lambda. Other constant measurements are 0 hat and 1 hat. 0 hat is concentrated at 0, 1 hat is concentrated at 1. Other examples are the 1-0 measurements, corresponding to any effect, you get a 1-0 measurement. So let's say you have an effect A, it gives you a 1-0 measurement A hat. A hat takes 1 to A and 0 to A prime. Okay, now I'm ready to define the sum of a measurement. So which measurements can I add together? Well, we get the clue from what circle sum is. It's kind of an orthogonal sum, an ortho sum. So it's supposed to sum orthogonal things. And when would two measurements be orthogonal? Well, I think it's fairly natural to, well, let me make a comment, first of all, about what I'm going to do here. There are two things I'm going to do here. And both of these things may want half of the audience to leave. So, okay. One is that I'm going to take it seriously that a measurement has values. So in other words, I think of a measurement as I perform an experiment, I get some values. Perform an experiment again, I get values. I'm going to take these values seriously. People in quantum computation usually don't care about the values of their measurements. All they're concerned about is the measurement elements. But I need those values in order to find the sum and product. So I will take values of measurements very seriously. And the other thing is I'm going to have a very special role for the number 0. The number 0 is a very special number. It's, first of all, it's the additive inverse. What am I saying? It's the additive identity on the reals. And besides that, it's the only real number that doesn't have a multiplicative inverse. The only real number that, as you multiply it by, is not a bijection. So those two properties make 0 very important for what I'm going to do. Okay, so I'm going to define the support of a measurement. And the support of a measurement is just, if you have measurement X, the support is just X of 0, 5. In other words, X is the real line except for 0. Throw 0 out. Take, it's where the measurement's non-zero. So take X of the complement of the singleton set with 0. That I call the support of X. And that's when I'll be able to find sums. So if I have two measurements, X and Y, I'll say they're orthogonal if their supports are orthogonal. And then if they are, happen to be orthogonal, then I'll define P of XY to be the sum of the supports. So the supports are orthogonal, so their orthosum exists. So I'll call that P. And now I'll define the sum of two measurements. Here you have X and Y. So we'll define X, if they're orthogonal, then we'll define X plus Y, X circle plus Y. It'll be a map from the Borel sets to the effects, and it'll be defined in a fairly natural way. X circle plus Y of delta is just a sum. X delta plus Y delta. If 0 is not contained in delta. So if 0 is not contained in delta, these things are inside the supports, and I can add the supports, and these are smaller, so I can certainly add those too. So that's defined. And then what happens if 0 is in delta? Then I'll define it in the following way. X circle plus of Y of delta will be X circle plus Y. Throw out 0. And we've already defined what it is. If I drew out 0, and okay, throw out 0, take that, and then take plus the support prime. So these two add up fine, and support prime is okay. That's orthogonal to the support, so it'll be orthogonal to this. It's smaller than the support, so I can add it. So that will be my sum. Maybe I should make a little, you know, a little drawing here. It's kind of like this. Here's your real line, a very important 0. And so let's suppose we have a measurement. Let's suppose it has, well, say, those values. And then we'll take another measurement. So that's, this is our X. We'll take another measurement. Suppose it has a bunch of values. Yeah, it could have some values that are the same as the other one. So those X's correspond to Y. So I'll be able to add X and Y if the sum of these measurements, well, it could have the value 0 too. It could have value 0 if you want. But throw that out. So if the sum of the measurement elements of all of these things except for 0 add up, then I can add X and Y. And then the sum is as follows. It's X at these points right here. X, what X does to these points here. It's Y at these points here. And where they agree is X plus Y. So that's what the sum will be. And let me show you that this, well, before I do that, let me mention that this gives you a measurement. So if X is orthogonal to Y, then X plus Y is indeed a measurement. So that's okay. That's good. And also, it has a structure. You take all of the measurements together with this 0 measurement and the circle plus, that gives you a generalized effect delta. So we have a kind of a structure now for our measurements. And let me show you that this sum has two important properties. Well, it has at least two, but two that I'll talk about now. And that is, it extends our old definition of plus on our effect algebra. And also, it preserves expectations. Two important properties. So in order to talk about expectations, let's talk about the states, the set of states on an effect algebra will denote by omega of E. And then, of course, this has an interpretation. S is the state, X delta. This is the probability that X has a value in set delta. That's the probability distribution on the real line. And okay, so you take S circle X, that's what I just said, it's probability distribution. And then we can find the expectation in the usual way. It's just the average of that probability distribution, if that integral exists. And now here's the theorem 3-2. It says the following. Let's suppose you take two effects that are orthogonal. Then I can add them together. And then I can take the hat of that. So that's the 1-0 measurement corresponding to this. And then it turns out that if I take the 1-0 measurement corresponding to A and that corresponding to B, those are orthogonal. I can add them up and get another measurement. Those are the same. So this says that this definition for sum extends the usual orthosum on the spectrum. And here we have, if two measurements are orthogonal and their expectations exist, then the expectation in any some particular state S, then the expectation of sum is the sum of the expectations. Another theorem is the following. Oh, this gives a characterization of when one measurement is less than or equal to another measurement. This order is not, and we'll see more about this later, it's not really a numerical order. It's a logical order of measurements. It says that x is less than or equal to y in this effect algebra order if and only if this effect is less than or equal to that effect. The effect that x has a value in delta is less than or equal to the effect that y has a value in delta. This holds for every Borel set that does not contain zero. Zero doesn't work. Zero will go the other way. Okay, then we got another theorem. As I said, we have a generalized effect algebra. That's not an effect algebra, but the intervals are always effect algebras. So let's take the interval in the set of measurements between these two standard measurements, 0 hat and 1 hat. That is isomorphic to our original effect algebra. So those give you all of the 1-0 measurements. And then if you take an arbitrary measurement, it's not 0, then if E happens to be an orthoalgebra, an orthomodular coset, or a Boolean algebra, then so is this new effect algebra here. It preserves those properties of the original effect algebra. The question is, does this theorem extend to other structures? And I don't know the answer. It's an open question whether this theorem holds for lattice-ordered effect algebras, MV effect algebras, and orthomodular lattices. Although I do know that this theorem does work in finite-dimensional Hilbert spaces, I don't know if it works. For those generalizations, for those other kinds, yeah. Okay, so moving along, I have a sum of measurements, and now I want to define product of measurements. And I can only do this for finite measurements. I don't know how to do it for arbitrary measurements. Okay, so in order to have a product of measurements, we'll need a product of effects, so I need a C. So let's suppose that E is a C, a sequential effect algebra. In fact, a sigma sequential effect algebra. And then let's take a finite measurement. Of course, a finite measurement just has a finite set of values, or sometimes they're called data sets or sample sets. So let's suppose that here's your data set, your measurement values for X, and here's your AIs are the measurement elements. So we'll write X in this way, just a set of pairs. These are the values, and those are the measurement elements corresponding to those values. So let's suppose we have two finite measurements, X and, oh, I see, I only need one. Yeah. Let's suppose X is a finite measurement and Y is an arbitrary measurement. Then I can define what I call the conditional measurement. This is the measurement of Y conditioned on this finite measurement. So I'm thinking of first you make the measurement X and then you make the measurement Y. Sequential conditioning here. Then I can define this thing as a map from the Borel sets into the effects in the following way. Y bar X acting on a delta Borel set is equal to, should be a sum there, it should be a circle sum of AI circle Y delta. So this just means first you do X, so you get some value, say first value, and then you do Y, Or you can get a second value, then you do IR, a third value, then you get Y. So that's what you get. It's essentially the Luders formula for conditioning. And one can check that this thing really is a measurement. And also, I need to throw in this here, in general, two measurements are compatible if they commute for all real sets. And one can show that if you have one of these finite measurements in Y, and if they're compatible, then Y conditioned on X is Y. So X is not going to affect Y at all if they're compatible. The converse doesn't hold. Y conditioned on X could be Y, but even in compatible case, in uncompatible case, it could happen. But we now have some structure here, which is good, I think, and that is that if you have, I guess Y and Z are two arbitrary measurements, X is a finite measurement, and if Y is orthogonal to Z, so I can add them, then I get Y plus Z conditioned on X is the same thing as Y conditioned on X plus Z conditioned on X. So that conditioning preserves the sum. Now, I guess I'm ready to find the product of two measurements. So let's take, we have two finite measurements. I can only do it for finite measurements. And so this first one, X, is this here, and the second one, Y, in terms of the mu i's and the bj, mu j's and bj's. Then I'll define, I've got to be able to find the product for any two. I can define the product for two finite measurements as follows. First of all, I want to know what the value set is. As I said before, the values are important in this. So the value set for this product is just a subset of the products of the values of the two measurements. So this is a bunch of values, this is a bunch of values. It's the products of all of those. Those will give you a bunch of numbers. The values of this will be a subset of it. And here we go. X circle Y acting on one of these values, it's a product of something there and something there, will be, just take the circle plus of all of the AR circle B S's, those all exist, for all of them that are equal to this lambda I mu j. In other words, you certainly have a AI circle BJ there, but there may be others that are also the same. Add those all up, that's A circle Y. And that's if this sum is not zero. If this sum happens to be zero, then it's just not a value. That number is not in the value set. And again, it turns out that if I take this product, then I will then get a measurement again. And this measurement satisfies some properties that are good. And those are the following. If you multiply 1 times x, and x times 1, you get x back again. 0 gives you 0. If you do the measurements in this order and get 0, then the measurements in the other order give you 0. That's a property that we had for C. And another property is that this product extends the usual sequential product from 1, 0 measurements. So in other words, if I take A and B, take their sequential product, and take the corresponding 1, 0 measurement, that's the same thing as multiplying the two measurements using this definition here. Finally, we have a distributivity law. It says that if y is orthogonal to z, then x circle y is orthogonal to x circle z, and x circle y plus z is x circle y plus x circle z. All right. Now, I want to show you that if we restrict this notion of sums of effect valued measures to what I call observables, Hilbert space observables. So for me, a Hilbert space observable is the self-adjoint operator. This will give us a new order on self-adjoint operators, which looks kind of interesting, and it's quite simple. So let's take the usual Hilbert space effect algebra, and then the projection valued measures I'll call Hilbert space observables. And of course, these Hilbert space observables correspond to self-adjoint operators by the spectrum. So in this work, I will restrict my attention to S of H, which is the set of bounded self-adjoint operators on Hilbert space H. Now, one could consider the usual order of self-adjoint operators, the usual order. A less than or equal to B means that AX comma X is less than or equal to BX comma X, which essentially says that the expectation of the observable A is less than or equal to the expectation of the observable B for any state. That's the usual order that one takes for self-adjoint operators. And this makes a set of self-adjoint operators into a partially ordered set. Unfortunately, this is not a lattice. There's a famous result of Catasin that says that in this order, the self-adjoint operators do not form a lattice. In fact, they're as far from being a lattice as you possibly can have, and he calls those anti-lattices. The only way that A is less than or equal to B is if they're comparable. The only way that A, if B exists is if they're comparable. So their M-center soups exist only when they are forced to. And so it's far from being a lattice. So we can think of this order as a numerical order. The expectations are less than or equal to the other expectations. Now I'm going to introduce a new order that comes from this effect algebra business, which I would call a logical order on observables. And as we'll see, we wrote this down before, I can call it a logical order because in this order, A will be less than or equal to B, called this the new order, if and only if the spectral measure of A on any delta is less than or equal to the spectral measure of B on any delta, whenever zero is not contained in delta. And I'll show that this new order comes from a orthosum on a generalized effect algebra. It'll come from what we did before. And this old order can't be gotten that way. You cannot get that old order in this logical way. The old order cannot be got from an effect algebra. And I'll show that this new one is almost a lattice. In fact, whenever you have two self-adjoint operators, and if they have an upper bound, then they're always, then they'll have a least upper bound and a greatest lower bound. Okay, so. Oh yeah. Before, remember, when we had two measurements, we said they're orthogonal if their supports are orthogonal. Now, if we talk about self-adjoint operators, A will be orthogonal to B, and only if, here's their supports. These are called the support projections. So A is orthogonal to B if and only if the support projections are orthogonal, which means that A is equivalent to A times B is zero. So when you restrict this order self-adjoint operators, I can only, if I restrict the sum to self-adjoint operators, I can only add two self-adjoint operators when their product is zero. So if their product is zero, then their sum will be their ordinary sum, follows from what we did before. So this gives you a effect algebra of self-adjoint operators, and here's their sum. And it turns out that in this case, you get a generalized ortho-algebra. You cannot add a self-adjoint operator to itself unless it's zero. That's because the support, it won't have a disjoint support from itself unless it's zero. So you take the self-adjoint operators, you find the sum, you get a generalized ortho-algebra. And then you get the order from this ortho-algebra in the usual way. A less than or equal to B if there's a C, orthogonal to A, such that A plus C is B. And then you again get a partially ordered set. All the self-adjoint operators will be greater than or equal to zero in this order. And for shortness, I will denote the support projection by P sub A, support projection of A. And here is a theorem that gives you, characterizes this order in various ways. It says, if you have two self-adjoint operators, the following statements are equivalent. A less than or equal to B in the new order is equivalent to A being B on the range of A, closure to the range of A, or it's equivalent to saying that A is equal to B times the support projection of A. Or another way of saying it is A times B is A squared, which is similar to what you do for projections. Another way of saying it is the same thing you had before, P A delta less than or equal to P B delta whenever delta is a real set not containing zero. And we see, for one thing, from this theorem that this order extends the order of projections. It's an order on the self-adjoint operators that extends the order of ordinary order of projections. And here's a little corollary of this theorem. It says that if you take the self-adjoint operators and you take the interval 0 to the identity, then this gives you the projections. And here, I didn't talk about principle, but says that every self-adjoint operator is principal in this system, in this orthoalgebra. And here's a little theorem that says if A is less than or equal to B in this new order, and you have any old Borel function that's 0 at 0, then f of A is less than or equal to f of B. Let me say a few words about that corollary. And it's this. From this corollary, we get the nice thing that if A is less than or equal to B, then A squared is less than or equal to B squared, for example. And that doesn't hold in that old order. The old order has some nasty properties, and this order also has some nasty properties. But one of the nasty properties of the old order, which I can't stand, is the following, and that is that you can have an effect. A, here's the effect A and B. And right here, there it is. This effect A in two dimensions, and this effect B. And show that A is less than or equal to B, but A squared is not less than or equal to B squared. And I think that's nasty. But this new order doesn't have a nasty property. Here's a couple of theorems. Let's say you have a projection, and you take the interval from 0 up to that projection in these self-adjoint operators. That turns out to be all of the projections less than or equal to P. So this interval just has the projections up to P. Another theorem is that if you have an increasing sequence of self-adjoint operators as bounded above, then their soup exists in the self-adjoint operators and, in fact, is the limit in the strong operator topology of these AIs. And one can show that you can't get a stronger theorem than this. In other words, you have to have this B here. If you don't have the B, then in general, the limit won't exist. So this shows you that this SH, this set of self-adjoint operators, although it forms a generalized orthoalgebra, is not a generalized sigma orthoalgebra. However, the intervals are. So here's a theorem. If you take the self-adjoint operators with this new order, you take any interval, it's a sigma orthomodular poset. In fact, let's show in a minute that it's a sigma orthomodular lattice. Just mention that this new order is not related to the old order at all. Neither one implies the other. Except in certain circumstances, for example, if A is less than or equal to B in the new order and B happens to be greater than or equal to 0, then A will be less than or equal to B in the old order. And one can give examples in which you see that the soup does not exist in general in this orthoalgebra. And I would like to know where the inf exists. I don't know whether it does or not always exists. However, in intervals, they will. So that's the next theorem, I think. Well, that's next corollary. Question is, let's suppose you've got a self-adjoint operator, and then look at this interval. You know that's a effect algebra. I guess it's more than that. It's a sigma orthomodular poset. And this theorem says that this interval is isomorphic, sigma isomorphic, to a sigma orthomodular lattice. Namely, all of the projections that are less than or equal to the support projection and the commute with A. So this then says that if you take these intervals in this orthoalgebra, they're sigma orthomodular lattices. And as a corollary, we get that it's almost a lattice. In other words, A inf B exists and A sup B exist whenever A and B are bounded. Okay, getting late. Let me give you my last page here, and it goes, it talks about finite dimensional situations, finite dimensional observables, and really observables in a finite dimensional Hilbert space. And of course, we can get stronger results then. And this gives you an idea of what this order really looks like. So let's say we're in a finite dimensional Hilbert space. And then take your two self-adjoint operators. Then B is less than or equal to A. By the previous theorem, means that for one thing, they commute. And for another thing, it shows you what it means to be less than or equal to. You can simultaneously diagonalize them since they commute. And so let's suppose A is this diagonal matrix and B is that diagonal matrix. Then B will be less than or equal to A whenever B is the same as A whenever a diagonal element is not zero. So it just means that B is less than or equal to A if B is the same thing as A but has a few more zeros. More zero eigenvalues. The eigenvalues will be the same, except we'll have some more zeros in general than A does. So that's the order. And a couple of results here is if you have finite dimensional Hilbert space and you take an invertible, non-degenerate, meaning that all of its non-zero eigenvalues are distinct, you take such a self-adjoint operator and you take the interval, that turns out to be Boolean algebra, isomorphic to 2 to the n. And if you take a kind of a degenerate one, let's suppose A is non-degenerate, but it's not invertible in general, so its spectrum could have zero in it. And suppose that the cardinality of the spectrum, non-zero spectrum, is m, then that's isomorphic to Boolean algebra 2 to the m. The general result is this: finite dimensional Hilbert space. Suppose you have a spectral resolution. A equals lambda I pi. Lambda i's are the non-zero distinct eigenvalues, and the pi's have dimension ni. In the interval 0, A is isomorphic to the Cartesian product of the projection lattice, dimension n1 times n2 times nj. Last result is that if the Hilbert space happens to be finite dimensional, then I can show that the m of the two self-adjoint operators always exists. So I hope that I've shown you that one can get structures for quantum measurements, and it might be useful. Maybe I should mention, do I have like 1 minute, or do you want me to finish? Okay, I'll wrap it up, and any questions, I'm open. Thanks. Oh, what was I about to say? I was about to say, one could try to generalize this to quantum operations. These are actually more general than quantum measurements. Quantum operations are sometimes called quantum channels, and those are completely positive operators from the states into the cells of the trace preserving. One could try to add those two things. And I've tried to do that, but you lose something when you do that, because these are kind of complex value things. And the field you measures are real value objects, actually positive. And what you do is you lose that positivity axiom of the generalized effect algebra when you try to add quantum operations. And if you lose positivity, you no longer have a generalized effect algebra, and you don't have a partial order, and so things are not so nice. So I kind of abandoned trying to do that. But you can do it, but you get something even more general than a generalized effect algebra. Any other questions? Yes? Oh. Somewhat? Some logics. Oh, yeah. When you hear a song. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't even thought of that. I should have probably thought of that, but yeah, I'll look at that. Thanks. Yeah.
Hello there. Thank you for coming to my talk.